Welcome, this is William Evans, and you're listening to Shifting Gears. Our guest today is Roderick O'Connor, a longtime member of the martial art community in the Roaring Fork Valley, and a law enforcement officer. Welcome, Roderick.
Thank you. Great to be here.
We're in a series of conversations about trust, and you've spent years training your skills to deal with incoming aggression and sometimes even violent fire.
Yes.
So to do that, you read a level of trust of your internal fire at every moment, and then simultaneously you're reading the situational intention of the firepower around you.
Exactly. For me, it's a place of getting centered and then extending that centeredness out into the world around me to pick up on what cues and signals I need to receive from the environment.
Do you think in the absence of trust, we're vulnerable to being run by fear?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like it's either, if I'm coming from love or I'm coming from fear. I'm coming from trust or I'm not. And when I'm not, then fear has a great opportunity to step in and, be my default mechanism, if you will.
So when a high level of fear is flowing through an individual or a community, everyone's priority is to escape what's fearful.
Yeah, our amygdala is fired up, and we're just like, we want away from the danger. We want away from whatever our amygdala is perceiving is going to eat us. But it doesn't lead to a good quality of life.
So how do you keep your water calm to maintain that clarity?
Well, for me personally, it's through many years of practice and having met some wonderful teachers, I've learned about the importance of breath and how breath can keep us calm, but also the importance of center, having a physical center in my body, but it's more of a psychophysiological center, spiritual center, where when things get a little weird around me or in my emotional body, then I can come to my center, and that tends to calm things down.
What have you learned about collective trust within the community and within the team you work with?
Well, collective trust is important, too. I struggle with trust a lot because it's one of those things out in the world where, can I trust people? And I want to be able to trust everybody, and I've also learned in life that sometimes you trust people that end up shouldn't have trusted. Ronald Reagan said something which I really like. He said, trust but verify. Sometimes I fail in the verifying part. I'm kind of open to just trusting people, assuming they're going to do what they say they're going to do. But in a community where people do what they say they're going to do, that definitely builds a deep well of trust between everybody, and we can count on each other. Like in my law enforcement world, working with the other people I work with about 30 people, and we all pretty much burn clean with each other and have a pretty good level of trust that we can count on each other.
Burn clean. I like that. I've never heard that phrase before.
Yeah. That's where there's no carbon or any buildup between us where, I'm straight with you, you're straight with me. And, because of that, we know where each of us stands.
I have a friend who reminded me of something. She said that when she and her brother were young and they were jousting in the back seat, her mother would turn around to her and say, keep the peace.
Right.
And, I haven't heard that phrase for a long time, but I used to hear it.
Yeah. As a kid, especially growing up, keep the peace.
Right.
Make sure, everything's calm and stable and centered and appropriate, yeah.
Well, they lived with that agreement, and so the family trusted that basal state.
Yeah, that's nice.
Do you think we live in a more violent time now?
It seems that. I think it's mostly because of CNN and Fox News. I read a lot of history, and we've definitely had some violent times in our history, not too many years ago history, from the, well, about 1,000 years ago with the Vikings and all in Europe and what they were doing. People just weren't safe anywhere in England. And then in the early part of this country, you know, just a couple hundred, 250 years ago with the struggles between the French and the English and the Native Americans, there was a lot of violence that existed there, but we didn't have CNN and Fox reporting every night about the violence. Human beings, I think by nature, we can be taught to be violent. It's probably not our basic nature, from what I've understood. About 2% of us are natural born killers, if you will. And, you know, maybe half of them end up in the military and the other half end up as natural, you know, bad guys. But the rest of us have to be taught. We have to learn how to harm another person. That's why I teach self-defense and self-protection classes. It's challenging to get people to hurt another person, even though that person's hurting them. But until you're shown something, we're like, you know, monkey see, monkey do. Until we're shown something, we don't know that we have a way of, you know, protecting ourselves. And once we're shown that, then that builds our confidence and our competence, and then we can walk about in a world where, you know, and like for me, I haven't been in a fight since ninth grade, and I'm closing in on 70. So, and I think a lot of it has to do with my martial art, Aikido background specifically, and my other training through the police world, that, you know, I'm confident and competent when I walk into situations that, you know, I'll prevail in that situation, certainly when I'm in uniform.
You're confident you will prevail.
Yeah, and competent behind that. Yeah, it's not just a bravado. It's actually, you know, I have the skill set to pull it off if things went south.
Right. People, I'm hearing some people say they've got to be able to digest an experience. And they'll talk about the digestive fire, and it takes a certain amount of fire with all that training to have the courage to step into it.
Yeah, one of the ways I look at it is, you know, if the fire is the situation, the fire is the intense situation, and do I have the courage to stand in the midst of that fire and deal with whatever has to happen, whatever has to occur, instead of being consumed by it? Can I use it as a starting place?
And there's a big difference between a fire of peace inside of me and the attention to maintain that versus a raging fire of violence.
Yeah, anger feelings are way different than a peaceful feeling. They're both very powerful, but the anger one, you know, harms others, harms ourselves. With the peaceful one, you know, we can protect ourselves and protect others, and if we need to deliver violence upon a bad person, then we're able to do that, but in a much more conscious, mindful way.
This is KDNK. You're listening to Shifting Gears. I'm William Evans. I'm speaking with Roderick O'Connor about trust. Anything that you've learned about collective trust? You talked about your team. How about your community?
You know, that's an interesting one. I think it's more subtle. For me, it's not as loud. It's not as consciously present in my life as my work world. Like when I travel around Carbondale, I just, you know, come from a place where, you know, I'm safe. Things are safe here. People are peaceful here. And, you know, like we have an agreement that works for most of us, maybe all of us. And so that collective trust is kind of, for me, I think it's more on the subconscious level than the conscious level.
But it's a huge blessing to live in a peaceful place.
Oh, a huge blessing. I had the opportunity to go to an autopsy a number of years ago of somebody who fell into the river and drowned, and a homeless person. And we weren't sure if he had gotten hit on the head or if he just fell into the river. As it turned out, he just fell into the river. But the doctor, Dr. Kurtzman, he mentioned how he had grown up in Detroit and how he would do 400 or 500 autopsies a year on violent things that happened to people, and how here, you know, he's in Grand Junction, but between Grand Junction and the Roaring Fork Valley, he does, you know, half a dozen a year or something. And he said, yeah, it's more civilized here. And I really like that, because it is really more civilized here. And I think we all enjoy that civilized aspect of it where, you know, I mean, I see women out running on the bike paths by themselves when I go hiking. Like I went up Red Hill yesterday. Most of the women I saw up and down, they were by themselves, maybe with a dog, but most of them weren't. And it's like, wow, you can't do that everywhere on the planet.
No.
But you can do that here, certainly in the Roaring Fork Valley and hopefully in many other places in America.
How did you learn about trust?
I think when I was younger, I learned a lot about it because I wasn't a very trusting person. Things were, situation in my home environment wasn't very healthy and good, and couldn't trust from one day to the other where my mom or dad were going to be at as far as their level of awareness. You know, they'd be intoxicated a lot, and they just weren't present. So I had to figure out how to make my way on my own, in a sense that I had to learn how to trust myself. And that was a long process, you know, a decades-long process, learning how to trust myself. And then from that, then I started, you know, reaching out and starting feeling out and trusting other people, you know, getting into relationships with, you know, friends or, you know, a girlfriend. And then, you know, the martial art community has been very helpful. And then, you know, the last 20 years, I've been in the law enforcement community, which has been just awesome, just a great group of people, men and women there. And that's really helped me become a lot more grounded as I get older and trusting. And then there's the deeper trust too, trusting in the universe. You know, it's like, you know, am I going to be abandoned by the universe? And I think through the Aikido training, through, you know, when we're how to be centered and where my power comes from, I think that plugs me in and connects me with the universe in a way that, you know, I'm totally trusting in the universe that, you know, even if it seems like I lack in some area, I know I'll be sustained.
Yeah, in the course of these conversations, I realize how consistent people say they've got to learn to trust themselves. And the friend I mentioned earlier, the one rule in her household was be true to yourself. And she said as a result of that, she had to learn to trust herself.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, one of my teachers, Tom Crum, he said the fire is always the hottest in the home. And that's been true. I mean, Denise and I have been together now 20 years. And it's taken me a long time to learn how to find that balance for me in that, not, you know, cave in under somebody else's intensity. But to be able to, you know, match them, meet them, and by having that, you know, me coming forth 100%, she coming forth 100%, how that creates a much stronger, much more balanced relationship, and that also, you know, works towards the trust factor, knowing that, you know, we can count on each other there also.
Yeah, I know. In my experience, I have to trust myself not to shrink and contract in the presence of aggressive people.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I have to be sure and then figure out the right skill for this situation.
Yeah. In my world, you know, since I'm in law enforcement, I get to deal with aggressive people frequently. And it's been great training. It's been great training to, because we can't shrink. We gotta, you know, meet them where they're at and maybe be telling them things they don't want to hear, but that they, if they comply with, things will go better for them. And if they don't comply with them, then, you know, things may get a little bit more physical. But typically, you know, people get it. You know, they want to, and we do it with a lot of dignity and respect so that they don't feel like their integrity is being challenged by us. But we still need to get them to either move along or turn around and put their hands behind their back so we can place handcuffs on them, you know, depending on whatever the situation was that they were involved in. And so it's been great practice being able to deal with that. And so now, you know, if I'm driving down the road, I get cut off, you know, in a road rage situation, it tends to be, you know, not any big deal. It's like, whatever. You know, I definitely, you know, I'll back off and just let that other person go. And if, you know, if they're really out of control, then I'll call 911 and, you know, get the cops in the area after that, but that rarely happens.
So in addition to the training where you maintain your physical skills, you also were immersed in the Our Community Listens program.
Correct.
Talk about what's happening now with that, and do you still use that in terms of people trusting your ability to listen to them?
Yeah, it's been an interesting evolution since I did that class. I haven't done anything recently with them, not since you and I went to that event.
Right.
Either last summer or the summer before, but that was the last time. But since then, I've taken another class. They consider it an advanced communication class, but it's called Crisis Intervention Training, and it's how to deal with mental health, mentally ill people, people who are on substances, and the homeless. And that was really great because as law enforcement officers, we tend to want to go to problem solving as our first step. Okay, what's going on here? Okay, and then we come up with the solution on how to fix it. And in this training, they would have these actors act out different mental health situations and homeless or drug addiction situations. And the main thing they wanted us to do is to develop rapport, establish rapport with the person, and that takes time. And then get some empathy going. And then from the empathy, once we establish the empathy, then we can start problem solving with the person and start to try to figure out, okay, who do we need to call? Who can help them? Do they have a counselor? All that kind of stuff. And in the CIT class, they told us that, you know, the average CIT intervention, you know, takes a minimum of an hour. In my experience, it's much longer than that. I can think of a couple situations. One was, you know, a couple hours, and another one with the suicidal guy was about 4 hours. But it's just, you know, it's valuable training to be able to communicate with people, to be able to listen, find out what's going on, find out where they're at, and trust that you can do that.
I had no idea you'd take that long with somebody.
Yeah.
So on a larger scale and outside this idealized valley where we're blessed to live, I think the level of mistrust is increasing.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, it starts at the top currently, and it's moving in lots of different directions. And but it also could be a catalyst. It could be a catalyst for stirring the pot. You know, like Dick Gregory always said, he said, you know, he's like the agitator in a washing machine. You know, clothes don't get clean unless you have the agitator. And it's like, yeah, you know, so maybe Trump and other situations are agitating, you know, things right now. And we're all going, what is going on here? And, you know, maybe it's for the better in the long run. Not that I support a lot of the politics and the stuff going on. However, it's making us all look at things. It's making us look at, okay, what are my values? What do I really believe in? You know, do I trust our system? Those kinds of things. Is that kind of behavior acceptable anymore? Or what is acceptable behavior? So it's having us look at a lot of things.
So I hear you see an opportunity in what some people might find was weakening their trust to the system.
Yes. I mean, one of my favorite quotes is from Carlos Castaneda, and he said that the ordinary person sees everything as a curse or a blessing, and the warrior sees everything as an opportunity or a challenge. And I think if we can see it as an opportunity and a challenge, we'll be in the driver's seat on coming up with solutions for our problems versus seeing it as a curse or a blessing, because then we're just being the victim.
In order for us to get to solutions, we have to trust each other on a destination, a trajectory where we're headed.
Yeah, that's important too. And I think that's where from the CIT training, that's where developing rapport and then developing empathy, you know, learning, you know, what do we believe in? What is so for us? And what are our values? And can we move forward together in support of those?
So in order for us to trust each other, we have to agree and show up on time.
Well, that's part of it, showing up on time. Like, yeah, to an appointment or something like that. Yeah, but that's the starting with yourself. That's the, you know, my showing up on time is about, you know, me trusting me to be my word, to keep my word that I'm going
to
do
something.
To make
an agreement and
to make an agreement and keep it. And then it also helps build trust that you, then you can then count on me being where I say I'm going to be. And if I don't, like if I was late, like I got like today, if I had gotten caught in traffic or around the roundabout or something, I wasn't going to be here on time, you know, I would have needed to clean that up, that burning clean thing again. I would have needed to clean that up with you, you know, take responsibility for it.
Can you tell when somebody isn't trustworthy?
Not always. You know, it just depends. I mean, if I'm in my head, not always. If I'm in my emotions, not always. But if I'm more balanced and centered, head, heart, and center, then I have a much greater opportunity, a much greater chance of telling.
So yeah. You'll get a feeling if somebody's going to be tricky?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's the hair on the back of my neck goes up. You know, it's just my spider senses going, you know, something's weird here. But usually it's just, you know, having really good situational awareness where if I'm tossed away by emotions or off in my head, I'm not going to be able to do that. So I have to be in alignment with myself to be able to be present in the moment.
And what happens next usually in that kind of situation?
Well, most of the time when I step into those situations, the upset that's occurring in front of me tends to calm down either a little bit or a lot. You know, there are occasions where it doesn't, and then, you know, we have to, you know, go to plan B, whatever that might be. But most of the time, you know, even people under the influence of drugs and alcohol, they'll start to pick up on energetically that, you know, they need to ratchet back a little bit, even without words being spoken.
Any stories that you think we'd enjoy hearing? Some kind of a surprise in relation to trust.
Well, you know, I mean, we had, I think the last time we talked in here, we had a situation up in Aspen where a man came at us with razor blades, and he didn't respond to our normal level of trying to talk him down, trying to de-escalate the situation, trying to come up with another avenue for how to deal with the situation. He got on his railroad tracks, and he wanted to make a point. And he came at us, and we were able to de-escalate at that point without harming him and without any of us getting harmed. And then he was very cooperative after that. And I heard later that one of the things that, you know, he told people to jail was that he got that, you know, we were respecting him on some level. We weren't out to hurt him. And that made a difference for him because that hadn't been his usual experience around law enforcement officers. But we were also totally prepared. I mean, if he had taken another step toward us, you know, he probably wouldn't be here today.
So in that kind of situation, would you tase him?
That was one option, but since he was making a threat to cut us, and he had razor blades, and yeah, you know, like that's it is a lethal force encounter. He there's always the potential that if he had taken that next step toward us, that one of the three of us would have shot him.
But instead, he heard something he could trust.
Yes. And he dropped the razor blades and then cooperated with our commands, and we got him in the handcuffs.
Yeah, I'm realizing trust is a huge, huge bridge in terms of relationships.
Yeah.
And action and behavior.
And this guy hated cops, so whatever we did got him to comply. So he heard something in what we were saying that allowed him to trust us. And that we weren't going to hurt him once he decided he wasn't going to continue to try to hurt us.
Thank you, Roderick.
Oh, you're welcome, Will. Thanks again.
This is KDNK. You've been listening to Shifting Gears. I've been speaking with Roderick O'Connor about trust. You are